Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This is just one segment of today's show. You can hear all of our conversations about New York's vibrant cultural scene on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer, and we live in an age of more, musically speaking. More music on the internet, on MP3 players, and on satellite radio. We can and do listen to what we want, whenever, and wherever. But does this abundance affect the way we relate to music? A group of British psychologists has concluded that the answer is yes. And that, in fact, this broad palette of listening options actually saps our emotional response to music. Psychologist Adrian North from the University of Leicester in the UK led the study team, and he joins us on the phone now. Adrian, welcome to Soundcheck today.
Hi, thanks very much.
So we assume people still care deeply about music. How did you come up with the conclusion that people are actually becoming less emotionally invested in it?
Yeah, what we did, we managed to get 346 people who all had a cell phone, and then we sent them a short little SMS message once a day for 14 days, and it just said, please complete your questionnaire right now. And this message could have arrived on their cell phone at any time between 8 in the morning, I think 10 o'clock at night. Now, what this questionnaire asked them about was the music that they could hear around them right there and then. And it just asked some very basic questions here. Who were you with? What were you listening to? Where were you? What time is it? And particularly, why are you listening?
And so this could include things that people had put on their MP3 players, on their stereo systems, but it could also mean somebody was in the waiting room at the dentist's office and was hearing music being piped in.
Absolutely. You know, basically, you name it, you know, just whatever music you could hear. And it certainly didn't have to be, you know, the music you were concentrating on. It could be, for example, you know, the music you could hear in a shopping mall or in a restaurant or literally anything, anything.
So what was the rationale behind doing the study in the first place?
Yeah, where the study really came from is what we're quite interested in at the moment is how people use music in everyday life. The psychology of music, believe it or not, has actually been going since about the 1880s. It's one of the oldest aspects of psychological research. And during that time, we've learned an awful lot about how, you know, particularly university students react to various computer-generated bleeps that you play at them in the lab. What we still know precious little about, though, really, is how, you know, if you like, normal people react to normal music as they hear it in everyday listening situations. Now, what's particularly interesting about that at the moment is, of course, is with the digital revolution in music. You know, gone are the days where, you know, you have to search for hours and hours and hours and hours, you know, through record shops to find that old CD, that old record you've been looking for. Instead, now, with all these, you know, internet music download sites, you can basically access any music you want, wherever you want. And so what that led to really one of our first hypotheses, which is that, you know, essentially, I'm sure if you ask any economist, you know, what makes something valuable, they'd say to you that something's valuable because it's scarce. Now, of course, if music is no longer scarce, if you can access whatever you want, wherever you want it, on your MP3 player, via the internet, whatever, then music really shouldn't have any value anymore, or the value of music really ought to go down. Secondly, also, if you've got music available to you, you know, whatever music, wherever you want it, whenever you want it, what that suggests is that music is going to be less the focus of your concerns, and it's just going to be something that, you know, more floats into the background whilst you do something else.
So a new take on the old saying that familiarity breeds contempt.
If the music, absolutely, that's definitely it. Yeah,
the music's there. You don't have to listen full time to. You don't have to devote your full attention to it because you know you can just hit the repeat button and hear it again in half an hour.
Yeah. I mean, you can even take this a step further. I mean, if you look at kind of all the various, you know, products that are available out there to buy bits of software, you know, you can take a piece of music, and I don't know if it's legal or not, but it's certainly possible to play around with it, mix it with other bits of music. You know, it's this kind of inversion of the old hierarchy of music. You know, back, say, 100, 200 years ago, what would happen is a composer would produce a piece of music that typically he would then hand down to an orchestra, who in turn would hand down to the public at large. That's all changed now. You know, this hierarchy's flipped around. All right, composers still compose music, musicians still perform it. But now, you know, the consumer is very much an active agent in this as well.
Yeah. So what did you find out about, I mean, after all of this odd methodology of using a cell phone, I guess it was a pretty good way to reach 346 people, was it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, it's something that, you know, has only really been tried once before. Some people did it a few years back using pagers, but just because it was using pages, it was quite expensive. So we just thought, hey, cell phones, you know, it's much cheaper.
And all these people had their surveys, their questionnaires ready to go, and when they got the text message, it was time to fill it out.
Yeah, basically, I'm the only kind of proviso on that, we said things like, of course, if you're driving your car, then please don't do it. You know, pull over, and then when it's safe, when it's safe to complete the survey, please do so. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so the interests of science not conflicting with the interests of public health, at least
absolutely
to that
not.
Extent.
No, I don't think we killed anybody.
So what did you find out in terms of emotional attachment?
The crucial thing is, like I said, we asked people, who, what, when, where, and why about this music. And the thing we're most interested in, of course, is the why. And what we found is that when you say to people, why are you listening to this music that's there, they had a massive list of reasons they could pick from. I think it's about 25 or maybe even 30 reasons they could choose. What they tended to choose are these kind of really really boring reasons, if you like. The kind of reasons that you would expect given this idea of the digital revolution in music. So they'd say things like, I was listening to music because of habit, or I was listening to music because I didn't really have any choice, it was just there in the background. Or I was listening to music because it just helped pass the time, or it relieved a bit of boredom. There were very, very few instances of people saying, I listened to the music because it was the focus of my concerns, because I wanted a big emotional response, or I wanted an intellectual workout. Of course, some people did still say that, and of course, none of what I'm saying precludes the possibility of music to do any of these things still. But what the majority of what happened the majority of occasions was this very passive approach to music.
We're speaking with Dr. Adrian North. He's senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Leicester in England and leader of the team that studied whether, in fact, the surfeit of music around us is actually leading to a kind of musical apathy. I suppose if you were doing this, Adrian, between, you said, 8 a.m. and 10 p.m.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, that really is, a lot of that is the working day for people and the school day for college students.
I mean,
I could certainly see why people would not be able to focus in a lot of that period of time on the music that was playing.
That's certainly true. I mean, I think it's quite interesting. Well, there's two things that are really worth picking up. First of all, we found that certainly kind of, the frequency which people listen to music certainly varied whether or not they were, if you like, in absolute raw work time, say, over in the UK, 9 in the morning till 5 at night, or whether it was other times of the day. We found that people were particularly listening to music very much between 9 and 10 o'clock at night. That was, if you like, was just the peak incidence of listening to music. Just, clearly what people were doing was using music to wind down. But I think what's interesting also, given what you say, is that we still found, nonetheless, that even when people were listening to music at home, we still got, again, this pattern of using music in the background to something else. And obviously, like I say, there were more attempts to deliberately listen to music during leisure time. But still, even when people were at home, most of their listening experiences occurred whilst they were, say, doing housework, or whilst they were, say, having dinner, or, a whole branch of other things.
Yeah.
There were still very few instances, even in leisure time, of deliberate music listening.
Well, I suspect that, that this study will generate a bit of controversy, and I'm wondering what our listeners will think of this idea. Again, we're speaking with Dr. Adrian North, who is the leader of a group of British psychologists who've concluded that having music all around us, whenever, wherever we want, actually can lead to a lesser emotional response to music itself. And we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 212-264-7483. That's 212-264-7483. 7483 has having music is something like an iPod, which makes music portable. Has that changed your the way music impacts you and the ability to take music with you? Has that made it more of a commodity and less valuable somehow? You can also email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org. Adrian, as I rather suspected, the phone lines are all already filling up. We have an email here from Michael, who writes that listening to my iPod on the subways for him was, quote, an ideal way to get to know Elliot Carter's music. So here he's talking about some thorny, difficult contemporary classical music. He writes, something I've always intended to do but tended to procrastinate about when the only option was sitting down and listening to my stereo. So I have to say, I've found a similar response to my own MP3 players. It really does give me a chance to sit down and give some time to music that I've been meaning to listen to and simply haven't had a chance to.
Yeah, I think so very much. I mean, like you say, and certainly what came out of our findings are that, like I mentioned earlier on, yeah, even when people are at home, the music's in the background to something else. And if you think about it, that does make sense. You know, you come in from work, okay, you know, you've got to feed yourself, you've got to feed the kids, look after the dog, you know, do whatever it is that you've normally got to do at night. You can't assume that just because you're not at work that your working day has ended. Whereas what you find is, that's one of the beauties of portable music, is when you get this essentially dead time, as you say, sat on the subway, or as I was yesterday, sat up on a train going to visit my mum, then essentially that becomes your quality music listening time. There's nothing there to distract you at long last. You can actually focus on the music. So yeah, you often get this sense, certainly if you look at kind of the newspaper commentary on this, that somehow the whole idea of iPods and everything else, it must be bad, probably because it's technology. I'm not so sure that's the case. As your emailer says, it's maybe a great chance for some people to really get into the music, and it's the kind of chance that they're not necessarily going to get at home when there's so many other competing demands on their time.
So were you able to break down the study to the extent that you could determine if there was a different emotional response depending on whether the person had actually had time to sit down and consciously choose the music that they were listening to?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we very deliberately looked at is the whole issue of choice in this. I mean, obviously, in the modern day, there are certain times when we can choose to listen to music, like we've been talking about, say, through mobile MP3 players and the rest. But also, a lot of time, if you think about, almost any interaction you have with the commercial world these days seems to involve music, be it on hold, in the mall, in a restaurant, wherever. And we looked at how people gave different responses to these different reasons, or whether or not they would, just as a function of whether or not they'd been able to choose to listen to it. But the major thing that we did find, which I think was most surprising, is that we found that even when people had this music, if you like, foisted upon them by businesses, they still actually didn't really dislike it any much more than the music they'd chosen for themselves. Hmm. Okay, I don't know about you guys over there, but certainly over here there's the stereotype that any sort of pipe music must be awful, by definition. And we found nothing really to support that. When we asked people who hadn't chosen to be able to hear music, did it annoy you, yes or no? Only 14.7% of the time did they actually say, yes, it did annoy me. And that's about the same response, or about the same percentage, as we got to people who were responding to music that they had chosen to be able to hear.
Well, I guess
12%.
In either way, it's an emotional response. I really liked it, or it was on in the background, and I really hated it. It seems like there's a kind of muted response at both ends.
Let's
take some calls. Our number is 212-264-7483. 264-7483. We'll begin in New Jersey. Peter, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I like your show. I listen to it every day.
Great.
Simple question. What are you comparing your data to? So you've got like your current sample set, and you have a hypothesis that people are more apathetic. What are you comparing to?
All right, Adrian, you have a kind of a baseline that was established prior to the study?
This is the major difficulty in doing this kind of work, because obviously, like I said, all right, music psychology existed in the 1880s, but music psychologists certainly weren't doing research like this. What we're essentially basing our ideas on is the way in which people used to have access to music, before people had the radio and cheap record players and the rest. you know, just about our only exposure to music was, you know, kind of music in concert halls, music in places of religious worship, you know, and maybe there were one or two other instances, but that's basically it. In other words, if you heard music, you'd very deliberately opted into it, and, you know, music was the only thing there that you could focus on. No one sat in concert halls in the 1800s flicking through the newspaper, for instance. So, on the basis of that, you've got to assume that people very deliberately wanted to hear the music and they were giving it their full attention. But, you know, as Peter, I think it was, quite correctly points out, apart from that, there is no baseline yet. Hopefully this kind of research will be a baseline for people to maybe come back to in 10 years' time.
Okay, well, I mean, certainly, you know, it strikes me that even when people were sitting in concert halls in the 19th century, it's true enough they weren't flipping through through newspapers, but at that same time, people were out in the fields singing and playing instruments, and that really was sort of an accompaniment to something else that they were doing at the same time. So, I mean, it just seems to me that the idea that that people focused more intently on music in the old days, I don't know. I mean, some music.
It's certainly a debatable point. Absolutely, yeah. I certainly wouldn't try to argue that one too strongly. I mean, as you say, the whole history of work music, you know, it goes back centuries.
Sure.
Centuries, and yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Raphael joining us in Brooklyn. Hi, Raphael.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what do you think about all this?
I just want to say my personal experience kind of supports the findings of the study.
How so?
I spent 10 days in total silence when I was doing a meditation course, and when I came back, the first time I heard music was like one of the most exciting. I mean, it was a song that I'd heard already like 30 times, but I put it on, and it was like so exciting.
So
it was like exhilarating. I could barely contain my feelings. It was amazing.
So the fact that you had spent 10 days without music, coming back to it, suddenly the value of even a very familiar song seemed enhanced to you.
It was extremely intense, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I think, actually, again, Raphael raises an interesting point there, which it's very important to distinguish between the value of, if you like, any one individual music listening episode right here, right now, and people's more general relationship with music. Like I say, our research certainly showed that, you know, in any one given listening incident, people were kind of lukewarm at best, really, about the music they could hear. But, you know, if you look at other research, when you actually just ask, say, there's a lot of research that asks adolescents, say, what are the things that you'd want to take to a desert island with you? And there you consistently find that music usually comes out top, way ahead of even things like, say, TV and computer games and the rest. So, you know, more generally speaking, humans have, you know, got this tremendously special relationship with music. It's just that, you know, all we're arguing here is that when you look at, you know, actual individual listening incidents, you know, whilst you're driving the car into work, then it's the value that you place on that particular piece of music right there and then isn't particularly high. Like I said earlier, you know, none of this, you know, negates the huge importance of music in our culture and in our society.
Okay. We're speaking with Dr. Adrian North, senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Leicester, about this study that seems to indicate a sort of a sapping of our emotional response to music just because of the sheer amount of it to which we are exposed these days. And we're speaking to our Soundcheck listeners as well. Natalie, also in Brooklyn, welcome to the program.
Hello, hi. I was actually, I'm really big on online communities like MySpace or even online musical communities like LastSM.com. And I find that because there's so much more music out there than even when I was a kid, that a lot of times people exchange mix playlists.
Right.
And I think my musical taste before I had like a personal Walkman or a personal iPod or could download songs was so much more limited to just top 40. It was a lot more difficult for me to find stuff. And the mix CD that I was able to put together, even just for Valentine's Day, was really like nostalgic, and a lot of it was underground local things in UK, local bands in Tokyo. I mean, just really amazing and exciting things. And I didn't really have a lot of time to do it. I was just really talking to people online and or like on MySpace and asking them for advice.
So for you, it's actually been the reverse. I mean, it's
Completely diverse. And of course, you know, also, you know, of course, sometimes I just want to veg or I just want to listen to certain music
right.
just to get me through the day. But I feel like the amount of music that's created now is so much great. I feel is so much greater than even when I was young, and my ability to access it is.
Well, I think Dr. North's study actually. I mean, that's part of the premises that there is so much more music now, Adrian, mm-hmm. than there has been before, and we have so much more access to it. So
absolutely,
I guess that was part of the rationale for the study to begin with.
Yeah, very much. I mean, it sounds like a rather bizarre analogy, but I think a very close one is the one with paint. I mean, it's only in like the last 150 years or so that we've actually had access to this wide range of paint colours. And if you look at the effect of that, you know, that that's had on the, you know, the way in which we deal with our homes and, of course, the way in which artists work, you know, music's just the same thing. As there's more music out there that's capable of doing so many different things to us, it makes sense that, you know, we should use music a lot more. You know, again, actively consume it. Don't just passively sit there and take it in.
Right.
You can use music for, you know, emotions A to Z, or A to Z, rather, for you guys.
Thank you for that.
A, B, and C. Then it makes more sense, yeah. I should also, by the way, congratulate Natalie on an excellent choice in British music. She has impeccable taste, by the way.
We have some pretty sharp listeners, and we've had some pretty interesting emails as well, which we'll need to get to at another time, but... we're out of time for the moment. Dr. Adrian North is Senior Lecturer in Psychology at the University of Leicester in the UK. Adrian, thank you for joining us. A very provocative study, and thanks for sharing it with us this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks very much. My pleasure.
Up next, a visit from the unconventional conductor, David Robertson of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, and later the indie band called Nethers, performing in our studio. This is Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to today's podcast of Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.